So, welcome, and thank you all for coming. This is the kind of kickoff meeting for Willow Bay and Grays Harbor in terms of our North of Falcon 2020 preseason planning for salmon fisheries this year. Wow, what a great turnout. Thank you all for coming. Really appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules to come out and help us craft fisheries with the impacts that we do have available. We've got some challenges, that's for sure. We've got some challenges, but at the same time, we've got some opportunities too. So I'm excited to talk with you folks about that and really want to make sure that you understand that we, as an agency, value your guys' input and your participation in the process. We get paid to be here, you guys don't. So we value that quite a bit. A couple of ground rules I want to talk about kind of right off the bat. We value your time. We want to start on time, and we're planning on ending on time. We will make ourselves available at the end of the meeting to have some other discussions about anything that you'd like to discuss within reason and within a time frame reason. My wife will start sending out a search party if I'm not home by 2 or so. So with that being said, we're going to ask everybody, let's try and be respectful. I know these issues, we can get really passionate, and everybody cares a lot. But at the same time, let's try and show some respect and make sure, one, that we keep the cursing to a minimum, public meeting. We are recording, so your comments will be noted. So let's just try and be respectful. Make sure that you sign in. If you haven't signed in, please do so. Provide your email address. We use those email address to add to our distribution list. So in season, we like to send out information as press releases come out and stuff like that. We like to send that out to our distribution list so people make sure and have that sort of information. We've got a bunch of handouts over there on the table. Some of those we're going to talk about tonight. Some of those are just informational for you folks. We've got an agenda. We've got the three policies, the salmon management policies that kind of pertain to what we're going to discuss tonight. The Grays Harbor salmon management policy, the Willow Bay salmon management policy, and the North of Falcon policy. Our agenda tonight, which I forgot to grab a copy of, so I got to make sure I know what I'm doing. We're going to do some staff introductions, and it's kind of traditional to go around the room and have everybody introduce themselves, so we'll do that. That'll take a few minutes. We've got a presentation that we've prepared tonight. I know for some of you who have attended in the past, this presentation is going to look a little different than what we have done in the past. We're trying to match up with what's going to happen tomorrow at the statewide forecast meeting where Puget Sound and Columbia River and all those forecasts are going to be released tomorrow, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail later. But we're trying to match up a little bit of what's going to happen at that presentation and provide you guys some of that same information. Some of those things we're going to go over in real brief detail. If you're interested, you can always attend the meeting tomorrow and get a lot more detail on some of those presentations, specifically ocean condition stuff, SRKW, and some others. So if you don't understand SRKW, sorry, I'm using some jargon, Southern Resident Killer Whales and how they affect the statewide salmon fishery planning process. So about 6:40 here, we're going to go ahead and release the Grays Harbor Willow Bay forecast, and then we've left about an hour and 15 minutes just to have some discussion, talk about fisheries. I know people are going to want to talk about a variety of things, right? We've had some interesting new things happen in salmon management, steelhead management, here in the harbor, and I understand that folks might have some questions or want to talk about that. We'd like to keep this meeting discussing 2020 salmon, preseason salmon process, and hopefully maybe if we can get through some of those comments, we can talk about steelhead at the end or any other issues that people want to discuss. So with that being said, so we did staff introductions. I'm going to talk briefly about what the purpose of tonight's meeting is. We're going to go over kind of what the North of Falcon process is, talk a little bit about our formal rulemaking process, in terms of the Administrative and Procedures Act and how that relates and overlays with this North of Falcon preseason salmon planning process. I'm going to show some of the big picture stuff, like I discussed earlier, ocean conditions, talk about southern resident killer whales really briefly, and some of the constraining stocks that we have from a statewide perspective. And then we'll get into some of the management objectives that we have in the policies in front of you that I referenced earlier. And then we'll finish with the forecast and move right into public comment and questions. So we've had some changes here in the region. Know there's been some confusion about who does what and who reports to who now. A lot of new faces. So thought we'd take a second to go through some of that. My name is Chad Herring. I am the South Coast Fishery Policy Lead. I work in the statewide salmon management unit. Right now, my supervisor would be the state salmon and seal head manager. That position is currently vacant. So I'm reporting directly to the intergovernmental salmon manager, who is Kyle Addicks. He works in out of the NRB in Olympia. My job is to oversee the implementation of these policies and to be the crosswalk between regional fisheries management and headquarters. Okay, so that's kind of what I do. I've got some special guests in terms of staff in the audience tonight that I kind of want to call out. First, over here, Jenny Allen. She is our Region 6 Administrative Assistant. And then I'll go this gentleman right here, Kwasi Adey. He is our Puget Sound Commercial Fishery Monitoring Biologist. I've got Captain Dan Chadwick. He is the Captain for Enforcement Region 6. I saw Detachment Sergeant Brian Alexander there in the back. He is Grays Harbor County, right? Grays Harbor County. And then I've got a very special guest there in the back. I'll let him introduce himself. Without further ado, thank you, Ron. And now I'm going to go ahead and let the regional staff introduce themselves, starting with the top.
Larry Phillips, I'm the Region 6 Director. I think everybody knows that Region 6 is right over here, but I know there's going to be a lot of questions tonight, and I just want to make sure everyone knows that staff are available at all times, Monday through Friday, and cell phones, so reach out if you have any questions about anything today or tomorrow or throughout the year down the road. Feel free to reach out. We've got a lot of dedicated staff and we've got a lot of resources, so please take the time to do that. And I guess I'll introduce James Losey. James is our Region 6 Fish Program Manager. James and I have been together for, I know a lot of you are just getting to know James. James and I have been working together closely, primarily salmon management, South Puget Sound for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. It seems like a lot longer than that. But James came out here about 4 or 5 months ago and was doing a great job, in a very tough job, as you guys know. First time ever that we really had to close steelhead, make the entire Chehalis range, and that's, we didn't take that lightly. We're coming off a year of coho. We anticipated to be a really great bumper year and never really materialized. So we have a lot of challenges in front of us, but I'm confident in James and his staff, and they do a great job, and we get all these opportunities where we can. So James, can you do this staff? Thanks.
Yeah, so like Larry said, my name is James. So I've spent the last 4 months kind of digging into the details. I lead the technical work. You can see sort of track through those arrows. And there's a lot of stuff we've gotten in Montesano and Olympia to, try to get all these, fisheries and rivers dialed, but, there's a lot of folks in this room I've already met that have sort of filled in those gaps that maybe we don't have sitting in the office. So if you guys think you have eyes on something that I'm just not going to see otherwise, reach out, email me, I can give you my cell phone and keep the conversation going. So Randy Aho's not here. A lot of you guys have met him. He's been in the harbor a long time. He's our hatchery ops specialist for Grays Harbor. Him and I are just seeing eye to eye, and we're just working really well together, so we couldn't make it tonight. And then I think I'll let Mike introduce himself, but a lot of you guys know him as well.
I'm Mike Sharp. I'm the district fishery biologist for Chehalis in all weeks. You also probably know Kurt Holt. He's not here today. He's on vacation in Florida, so he's over at the badge working. But he's usually here, and then Kim, Victor Barnes is my other biologist that helped out.
Hi, I'm Libby Pope. I got hired in January, just this January, and I'm a new Wilkes Bay district biologist in the area, and I'll let my staff know as well.
Lyle James, Wilkes Bay, Stock Assessment Biologist.
Barbara McCullen, I'm the area biologist responsible for forecast making and in-season monitoring both the forecast and
Okay, so that's the staff. What I'm going to do now is it's kind of customary at all Norfolk Falcon meetings to go ahead the first time we meet and have the public introduce themselves so we can start to put some faces with names. As I said, we're all excited to work with you, and we want to, you know, be able to reference you when we're talking to you. So I think I'll start over here. That's you. That's you, Mara.
Mara Zimmerman.
Hal Ramzer.
Patrick Gaffin.
Kerry Hoffman.
Daryl Johnson.
Ben Omar Mars.
And feel free to throw in, you know, why you're here, who you're representing, that sort of stuff. Right here, Will Paul.
Bo Smith, third generation guy in Washington State.
Kyle Lowe.
Jason Humble, Washington State Fishing Facebook group, 40,000 plus members.
Corey May.
Mars, here to support Great Southern Guide Association.
Karen Sherman, same.
Scott Crawford, Great Southern Guide Association.
Thanks, Scott.
Ross Barker is interested in run recovery.
John Campbell.
Joe Durham, disgruntled fisherman. I'm here for conservation. Conservation.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm Patty Pye Online, and I grew up a dairy farmer's daughter at Porter on the Chehalis River. And I care about everything, and I see all these changes. And, you know, most disappointing thing was the no fishing in the summer because I couldn't catch the bass that are in there that are killing the salmon eggs. And,
you bet. No, that was a tough one. That was a tough one. Thank you.
Hank Feeder, just an old Grace Harbor fisherman I've been in all my life.
Bill Osmond, same old fisherman.
Good to see you, Bill. This young lady back here?
I'm with him.
You're with him? Okay. So, Norm's better half, can we say that? Or not Norm, Leroy. I'm sorry, Leroy.
Oh, only coming.
Jack Collinsworth.
Alan Collinsworth.
Let's go. Bob?
Bob Rayo, local fisherman.
Melanie Rubalia, his better half.
Thank you, Melanie. And then I'll jump over here, right there, yeah.
Donna Schoenberg, Great Harbor Guide Association.
Okay. Yeah. Would you two play?
Joel Baxter.
Yeah. What was that?
Jen,
okay.
Ray Vermillion, Great Harbor Guide Association.
Okay, thanks for coming around.
Matt Chandler, Great Harbor Guide Association.
Ian Wonder, Great Harbor Guide Association.
Jim McGrath.
Mike Kansian, Great Harbor Guide Association.
West Coast Anglers and Grace Harbor Guides Association.
Tim Hamilton,
Two Harbors Fish and Wildlife Guides.
No, Dave Hamilton.
Eric Heigler, just glad to be here.
John Brady, Jim Rachowski.
Mike Butler, commercial fisherman and sport fisherman, also a member of Washington State Fishing.
Ryan Johnson, Westport, Johns River.
Jess Pierce. Steve Smythe, and I am not his better half.
we'll try and keep that in mind.
That's true.
Gunther Botcher.
Kevin Beerbauer. Patrick Volunteer.
Okay.
Roger Wilder.
Brandon Burke.
Great. And then we got the three gentlemen in the back. I think that was everybody.
Jeff Perry, and Brother Robinson.
Ben Hamley, Bill Edge.
Chris McLean.
Okay, got a lot of new faces tonight, so we're excited to have this sort of turnout. This is the best. I've been out here for 7 years doing these meetings, and this is the best turnout I've had. So that's great, fantastic. Please, I apologize ahead of time if I didn't capture every one of your names. So thanks for coming. And let's go ahead and get started and jump right into the presentation. We're a little bit ahead of time, so that'll leave more time for conversation. So the purpose of the meeting tonight, why we're here. We're here to prepare for the 2020 North of Falcon process. We want to provide information that you that is needed for you to engage with meaningful input in the process. And we want to answer questions about some of that information. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I know those are real general, but that's why we're here. So moving right along. So salmon management. Salmon management overall. So salmon don't honor political boundaries during their migration. So salmon fishery planning must happen at a number of local jurisdictional levels. So the Pacific Salmon Treaty right here sets limits on catch and interceptions for salmon fisheries from Southeast Alaska to the Southern U.S. Washington and Oregon primarily, right? Covers this whole outside area here out in the international waters. As quotas are set for those fisheries each year, those catchers must be factored in as they affect numbers of fish that are returning to Washington. Okay, then inside that, we have the Pacific Fisheries Management Council here. They pretty much are responsible for fisheries in the economic exclusion zone from 3 miles to 200 miles offshore. Okay, and then on the inside, we have the North of Falcon process here, right? And that's WDFW, OEFNW, and the tribes. Fisheries in inside waters are planned through the North of Falcon process, and those happen under the legal framework of U.S. v. Washington and U.S. v. Oregon. Okay? So, moving on. A little bit about, for those of you who aren't familiar with the North of Falcon process, this is what we like to call, and this is our Steve Thiesfeld Memorial North of Falcon in a nutshell slide. For those of you who don't know Steve, he was a mentor to many of us that we lost tragically a few years ago. So kind of we keep this slide in and a picture on. You know, a few of us have pictures on our desk to memorialize Steve. So he really loved this one, so we keep it in here. Basically, what we start with is we forecast the abundance of each stock. Okay, then from there we can determine if there's a harvestable surplus. Once we've determined what that harvestable surplus is, we can model fisheries to determine which stocks are going to be the constraining stocks, right? We'll predict what we will catch under different fishing scenarios, and then negotiate with our tribal co-managers if necessary. Necessary for Grays Harbor, we have no tribal co-managers in Willapa Bay. And other states, in the instance of Columbia, places like that, for sharing of catch and stocks that are those constraints. So that's basically North of Falcon in a nutshell. Just that's how we move through the process. This whole thing will wrap up in about 8 weeks, I believe. And I'll get into a little more detail about the schedule right now. So tonight, February 27th, this is the Grays Harbor Willapa Bay kickoff meeting. It's, like I said earlier, going to be very similar to what's going to happen tomorrow here at the statewide Salmon Forecast and Fishing Opportunities meeting. That's going to take place at the Capitol campus there at the DSHS office building number 2 auditorium from 9 to 3 tomorrow. So some of the information that I'm giving you tonight is summarized from what's going to be presented tomorrow, specifically some of the ocean conditions and other stuff like that. We've got some way smarter people than me who are going to dive into a lot more detail about some of that stuff and what it means. So if you're interested in that stuff, you're going to hear some great presentations and have some great information tomorrow. So I encourage you to do that if you're so inclined. Then next, we're going to move to the first, what we call PFMC 1 council meeting. That takes place March 3rd through 9th, and it'll be down in the Doubletree Hotel in Roanoke Park, California. Keep in mind that PFMC, right, is where we talk about fisheries out in the ocean in that economic exclusion zone from 3 to 200 miles offshore. Basically, what they do at that meeting is we start discussing the first suite of ocean options. By the end of this meeting, council, hopefully, will come out of that meeting with 3 ocean options. Those are typically a high option, you know, hey, if we were going full bore with fishing opportunity, what would that look like? A medium option and a low option as well. So that's what happened at the Pacific Fisheries Council meeting. Then next, for us here on March 12th, we'll have a Willapa Bay Public Fisheries Discussion meeting. That'll happen at Raymond Elks Lodge from 6 to 8 down there in Raymond. We'll have a little bit more detailed information as we will know what those auction options start to look like. Remember that we've got to plan fisheries, right? All outside, all the way inside, and all those things have to be considered. So at that meeting, we'll have a little bit better idea of what those ocean options look like, so we can start narrowing in on a terminal package, right? What we may have for opportunity given those ocean options. Then next is what we call the North of Falcon 1 meeting. That's on March 16th. That'll be at the Lacey Community Center from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So just a ability for us to have a conversation with the public about North of Falcon and how everything's progressing, ocean options, different things like that. Here, March 23rd, this will be an important one for you folks if you're interested in ocean fishing. This will be the public hearing for ocean salmon management options. So that will be the official rulemaking hearing on those ocean options that come out of this first PFMC meeting down in California. I know some of you are going to say, I'll jump back for just a second. Why is that meeting in California? Because biologists from and fishery managers from Alaska, California, Oregon, and Washington, right? They'll all be in that part, all be involved in those processes. And those meetings kind of rotate around through the North Pacific, Northwest, and California, I guess I should say. So the first one is in California this year. So next, we on March 24th, we'll have the Grays Harbor public meeting right here, Montesano City Hall, 6 to 8 p.m. And then we'll move into some of our advisory group meetings. So we'll have a meeting with the Willapa Bay Advisory Group meeting. At these advisory group meetings, they are open to the public. The bulk of the meeting is just for conversation and discussion with the advisory group, but we always set some time aside at the end of the agenda for the public to be able to provide their input and comment. I think it's important that not only the agency hears that, but also those advisors. Remember, the advisors are supposed to represent you, right? They're your voice in this advisory group setting process. So if you don't know who your advisors are, I would advise you, too many advisories there, to go onto the webpage. On each of the Grays Harbor, Willapa Bay webpages for advisory groups, there is a roster of who those advisors are, and there's some contact information for you to be able to send them an email and start that conversation if you don't know who those advisors are. Then we have North of Falcon 2 at the lovely Linwood Embassy Suites in Linwood, Washington. We will have, I believe, this year, once again, planning on that plenary session that we had similar to last year, which is a chance for the public to hear from not only agency staff, but also some of the co-managers attend that meeting. Last year, we live-streamed that meeting, so I'm not sure if that option is going to be available this year, but it is a pretty good meeting, so something to pay attention to. And then we'll have a Grays Harbor Advisory Group meeting, just once again, similar to the Willapa Bay, it's just focused with Grays Harbor, more focused meeting just discussing Grays Harbor. That will be held at the WDFW Regional Office from 6 to 8 p.m. right here on Devonshire Road in Montesano on April 2nd. And then kind of everything culminates in this April 5th. Through the 10th Pacific Fisheries Management Council meeting, PFMC2. That will be at the Hilton Hotel in Vancouver, Washington this year. Basically, at that meeting, what they do is the council will narrow down those three ocean options into one option or some combination of the three options that were presented, right? That's kind of where all this culminates, and we get a final, I won't say final, I will say a proposed fishery package that will start to work through our legal APA and legal rulemaking process from that point. So if any of you are interested in seeing, we've got a link here that's available in your handouts for the public meeting schedule. If you go to this link on our WDFW site, you can find all this information there as well. So, one note that I forgot to mention, that public hearing, Ocean Salmon Management Options meeting in Westport, that's typically held at the Chateau Westport. Right now, we're not sure about booking that location, so the location's to be determined. We'll try and send it out vis-a-vis our distribution list when we get that finalized, or you can check this North of Falcon Public Meetings website, and as soon as that information is posted, as soon as that information is available, it will be posted there. So, as I mentioned earlier, we've got, in terms of preseason planning for salmon management, in Grace Harbor, Willow Bay, and across the state, really, we've got these two processes that are happening together, right? We've got the North of Falcon process, and then we've also got our formal rulemaking process that we have to go through, and that's dictated to us in the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, it starts with three pieces, the three important pieces to remember. It starts with a CR 101, then we move to a CR 102, and then a CR 103. So, the CR 101, basically what that is that's notification to the public that, hey, we're thinking about making some changes to rules, okay? And for Willow Bay and Grays Harbor, the commercial 101 for Willow Bay and Grays Harbor was filed on January 9th. We're kind of right here. I'm discussing right here in this kind of flow diagram. Okay, and then the rec fisheries, Willow Bay and Grays Harbor, that was filed on January 17th, 2020. It moved down this area. That was published to the Washington State Register 14 days after they were filed. Okay, so then moving to the 102. The 102 is, hey, this is what our proposal is for what those rules would look like. Okay, and that has to have a minimum of 45 days before, once the 101 is filed, before we can file a 102. So minimum time frame, you gotta let 45 days go through before you can file that 102, okay? Like I said, that's, hey, here's our rulemaking proposal, this is what we're thinking about doing. Now that starts in a very important process in terms of public input. For the next 35 days, and a minimum time has to pass before we have a public hearing about that proposed rule package. The public hearing is kind of our formal hearing for taking public comment, but it is not your only opportunity. You can send comments in, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on, and we'll provide you with some websites and links that you can use to send in comment. But this is not your only opportunity to send in comment. You can send in comment to us and some of the links that we've provided anytime throughout the year. This is just formally when we legally need to take those comments and then have a public hearing to do that. So between the 102 and the public hearing, minimum of 35 days has to pass. Then the last step, a 103. And the 103 is basically our final rule package, okay? We've took everything into account, we've considered all the public comment, what our proposed regulations were, and then we finalize those in our CR 103, and we write a concise explanatory statement, which is basically the legal justification for why we're making the rule changes that we are, if we may, right? And then that will be published to the Washington State Register 14 days after, and then they become legal in Washington's Administrative Code, or WAC, 31 days after filing of the 103, okay? So it's important that you understand both of these processes, right? These are both happening simultaneously as we move through this North of Falcon process. All right, so now I'm gonna move into a little bit of ocean conditions and big picture. So this slide here, this table, is courtesy of Dr. Lori Whitecamp of NOAA Fisheries. These graphics, these next couple of graphics came out of a presentation she gave to the Pacific Salmon Commission in January of 2020, just this year, just last month. So this is kind of a look behind the curtain there in terms of what biologists are looking at to help inform float casting moving forward. Now, I'm not going to walk through every one of these things. That's not important. What is important to know is up here, this is a 22-year data set, right? And up here, we have some ocean basin style scale metrics, so considering all the suite of options out in the ocean. Then down here, we have the physical metrics, okay? And then we have some biological metrics down in this section. And then we do some ranking of how overall the whole year ranks in terms of the rest of the years in the data set. Okay? So I'm not going to go through these in detail. Feel free to ask questions of your local biologist or James or some of the other technical staff to get some more detailed information about this. But just kind of want to walk through what we're looking at here a little bit. So moving on. So the cool thing about this table is it's color-coded, right? So quite simply, green or red years here, and this year was the 1997-1998 El Nino here, are basically bad for salmon. Warm ocean, not great prey availability, a whole bunch of things didn't line up, and that was not real good for salmon returning, right? Okay, then we've got some years here that are some greens and some yellows, and you can see down here where they rank, right? This year was second overall in terms of the whole data set. So lots of greens, lots of yellows. Those are good. Those are good for salmon, right? That means we're grabbing. The ocean's kicking out. We've got decent productivity. There's prey out there. The ocean's nice and cool. Lots of upwelling happening, mixing, all kinds of stuff that's just great for those fish as they migrate out into the ocean and then make up those returns coming back. Okay? Once again here, we got a lot of red and yellow, so bad years. Then over here, you can see lots of greens as we're starting to move into the 2000s. You got one bad right in the middle, but I think you kind of get the point. Green and yellow, better for salmon. Red, not so great, right? Yellow is actually neutral, and green means good. So now, what we've been dealing with lately. So over here, this box represents 2014, 2015, 16, and 17. This section of years is basically the blob, right? Warm ocean, all kinds of different species that we've never seen before, not great upwelling, not great prey availability, the type of prey that was out there, not real rich, southern species that are encountered up north. Low fat content, some of those type of things, and that one hasn't been real great for our returns of salmon, right? Then we have this year here, 18. So we see a lot of yellow, right? We even got a couple of greens, right? So there was a lot of optimism about, hey, blob's broken up, we're starting to turn the corner, ocean conditions are getting better. And I want to draw your attention to this little green box down here in the bottom, right? That basically was coho salmon juvenile abundance based on some NOAA trawl work that they do near shore, okay? And that was the second highest abundance of coho that they saw doing those near shore trawl surveys. That was the genesis of a lot of optimism in terms of coho forecasting, right? There was a lot of coho out there. Conditions had started to improve. We had a couple of greens here. We all know those returns did not materialize. They just didn't show up, right? And now we have setting up what's been, in 2019, what they're calling the marine heat wave, okay? That's been persisting out in the ocean, 2019. Recently, we've seen a lot of mixing, storms setting back up, and that marine heat wave has been breaking up, right? And that might take some... That might be interesting. We'll see what that looks moving forward. But right now, the projections in terms of ocean conditions moving through 2020, spring, summer, fall, are for warmer than normal. That's the forecast right now. I'm not going to get into how accurate that may or may not be. That's the forecast that we're getting from NOAA, is that we will continue to experience warm ocean conditions through the summer of 2020. Right? Okay. So... how does that actually mean to fish? How do we actually move that into something that's tangible, right? So, technical staff out here in the region have put together some really cool graphs for us to look at to kind of show what exactly we're talking about and what the kind of effects those have. So this is our stoplight chart up here, and basically these blue bars represent good years, right? Years that were green in the stoplight chart, in those what we call the stoplight chart that we just went through. And these red bars are years that were not good, right? They were all red, and they correspond down here on this axis to each of these ocean entry years. So we took a look at basically the survival or returns per release of Wilkes Bay hatchery Chinook. And you can see that when ocean conditions were good, we got some pretty decent survival. Now, this Willapa Bay hatchery Chinook, this is an aggregate of all hatchery releases. It's not specific to Forks Creek, Nacelle, Nema. It's an aggregate analysis of all those releases. When we were red, we see survival not so good down here, right? So you can see that how those ocean conditions shape up definitely affect the survival of our Chinook coming back in those years. Right? That lines up pretty well. Blue, section of blue. We got, you know, a little bit of red here, so there's some variability in there. There's some other conditions and other things that affect that as well. But overall, if you've got bad ocean conditions, you can expect bad returns. A lower survival is what you can expect. Maybe not bad returns, but lower survival. That's how I would characterize that. So, okay, moving on. Let me talk just briefly about southern resident killer whales. A lot of information on this slide. I'm not going to read it word for word. But basically, in April of 2019, the PFMC formed a work group to assess council area fisheries on southern resident killer whales. Okay? So council area fisheries, remember, that's out in the ocean, that 3-mile to 200-mile economic exclusion zone. They held meetings and drafted a risk assessment, and if you're interested in that, it's available in the briefing book from the March Council meeting following this link here. If you're interested in reading that risk assessment, it's available at that link. Okay? So then, the recommendation out of that process was to continue to develop measures in the annual fishery management plan, or as we refer to, FMPs, that are based on the risk assessment for southern resident killer whales, okay? How that will work and apply in 2020 fisheries planning is the National Marine Fisheries Service, in their annual guidance letter that they provide to the council, will include these measures that are meant to protect and recover southern resident killer whales, okay? So more information is available on the council website. Feel free to reach out to me if you want some additional information. I'm definitely not the expert on this, but we've got some folks in the agency who are, so I'll be happy to pass along whatever information I have. But just wanted to make aware that this is gonna be a big deal. We're going to have to consider the effect of our fisheries on southern resident killer whales, and that's something new. That's something we haven't had to do in prior years. And so this has all been elevated, and rightfully so, with the plight of what we see in those orcas. So that's that. And like I said, there'll be a lot more information about this tomorrow at the statewide forecast meeting. So that might be a place if you're interested. I don't know. Are we live streaming the forecast meeting tomorrow? We will be live streaming the forecast meeting. So is that on our Facebook link or on our website?
Website.
So if you go to the website tomorrow between 9 and 3, you can watch that meeting, and there'll be some more information on southern resident killer whales. Lastly, in terms of big picture from a statewide perspective that I want to talk about is some of those constraining stocks that we're going to have to deal with through the PFMC process and make sure that our total fishery package, when considered all the way from Alaska, Canada, Oregon, Washington, all the way through our estuary fisheries and terminal fisheries, meet their management objectives that are handed down through that guidance letter through the National Marine Fisheries Service. And then we also have some of our own policies and management objectives for some of those other stocks that aren't included as part of that federal stocks of concern process. So, some of the big ones for Chinook this year. Lower Columbia River Naturals, or LCNs, tules, I believe the forecasted abundance of those, right about 51,000 for this year, and that puts us in a spot where the management objective will be a 38% total exploitation rate. So when I say total exploitation rate, that means we have to consider Alaska impacts all the way through the terminal. So when you add all those up, you can't kill more than 38% of the forecast run. Okay? Another one that's been real problematic for us in these last few years, Midhood Canal Chinook. That one's been really constraining in terms of ocean and Puget Sound fisheries, right? We got a couple of those CWT recoveries in our fisheries, too, as well, out here on the coast. A real big one is Stillaguamish. Right now, we're looking at an 8% rate on Stillaguamish Chinook. That was severely constraining, and a lot of you might have heard something about that last year. So that one's going to be a real tough conversation this year to get to the rates we need to get to for Stillaguamish Chinook. Coho returns aren't looking real great in a lot of places. Lower Columbia, last year, you may have heard, for some of us out here on the coast, we seem to be kind of more plugged into the Columbia River than other areas of the state. We had a forecast of 1 million coho for the Columbia last year. This year, I'm hearing about 200,000. So only 20% of last year's forecast. And as we mentioned, that forecast didn't show up, I think. I think we're short of 400K or something like that in the 19 run reconstruction, 350 somewhere in there is what we're looking at. So a pretty low forecast. What that means that can elevate queet stock. Last year, and queets has been subject to, and we've been doing a rebuilding plan for queets coho. Last year, with that abundance of 1 million Columbia River coho and a small number of queets, wasn't too constraining for ocean fisheries because you had, if you look out in the ocean and you pour in a whole bunch of balls, and they're different colored, representing each of these different stocks, right? You got a whole bunch of Columbia River colored balls and very few queets balls, right? So your encounters, you're getting very few of those because the other abundances are just, very abundant. This year, with that lower Columbia River number, that makes queets all that more important, right? We're still about a similar forecast for queets as we have been in the recent past, but this Columbia River number is much, much lower. So that's going to elevate queets in terms of its constraints in ocean fisheries and may have some effects on us as we work through the process. A lot of Puget Sound stocks have poor forecasts for coho this year. A few off the top of my head, Skagit, Snohomish, and there's another that I'm forgetting, and I apologize for that. But overall, Puget Sound coho stocks are not looking great. And then chum stocks in Puget Sound were quite the issue last year, specifically South Puget Sound chum. This year, we're looking at chum forecasts across all North, Middle, and South Puget Sound that are not robust at all, well below their recent year averages. So those are going to be big constraints in Puget Sound fisheries. Probably not going to have an effect on us, but for those of you who are interested in Puget Sound, that's going to be a real constraining stuff. So now starting to focus more into what we're here to talk about, which is management objectives and for Grace Harbor and Willapa Bay. And I think if I had to do this over, I probably would have put the forecast before the management objectives. And Larry's smiling at me and nodding his head, yeah, you should have done that, Chad. And he's right. So why I'm saying that is we've got a forecast of spring Chinook that's below the escapement goal. Based on policy language, that means no recreational spring Chinook fishery. We'll get into the actual forecast in just a minute, but based on that policy language, it is below the escapement goal. So that's going to be a tough one. Hump tulips coho. We have not made our escapement goal 3 out of 5 years. Oh, and I forgot to mention, we've got a management objective and forecast handout. They're color-coded. So the Grace Harbor one is the blue one on the front. side, we have some of the management objectives and what they are, and on the back are the Grace Harbor forecasts. So basically, what our policy says for each of these stocks is, if you're not meeting the escapement objective 3 out of 5 years, right, you're not performing well in recent history, we're going to limit ourselves in the terminal area in WVFW, managed fisheries. That's important to remember. We're going to limit ourselves in our fisheries for what we manage to a 5% impact. Okay? We do that. That's what's in the policy. So for all our Grace Harbor stocks right now, the only one that is not meeting its management objective 3 out of 5 years for this upcoming season is Hump Tulips Coho. So right now, the only management constraint that we have within the harbor, now we don't have some great forecast numbers, and we're going to have to play with numbers and move some fisheries around to see how everything works out. But overall, we've got to limit Hump Tulips Coho to a 5% impact rate. All the other stocks, we just need to manage for their escapables. Okay, we'll talk a little bit about that in just a second and get into a little more detail. But that's a pretty cool thing. We haven't been there. Just one stock that's been in this, what some folks refer to as the penalty box, the not meeting escapement, 3 out of 5 years, for quite a while. I don't think we've ever been there since the policy has been enacted. Is that an accurate statement, Mike? And he's nodding his head yes. So, hey, that's good. We've got some opportunities that we can talk about in terms of fishery opportunity for Grace Harbor. So, moving forward into Willamette Bay. So we've got some policy and some commission guidance for 2020 fisheries. And basically for unmarked Chinook, our terminal impact rate will be capped for commercial recreational fisheries inside Willamette Bay to a 14% rate. So of those unmarked fish, wild fish that we're forecasting, once we're done with all our planning, we can't kill more than 14% of those in order to get at some of those hatchery fish. So that's our constraint there. For chum, we will be constrained to a 10% impact rate in the terminal area. Now it's important to note that for Chinook, I talked about how those are wild fish. For chum, it's just hatchery and wild altogether. In the aggregate, we're not going to impact more than 10% of that overall chum run coming back across the bar in Willamette Bay. Our fishery planning needs a result at the end with, and I'll use a little jargon here that you may hear in some of those successive meetings. We have some models. Once we start planning fisheries in those planning models, we have some boxes down on the bottom, and they're color-coded. If they're red, we're not meeting the objective. If they're green, they're meeting the objective. So at the end, we need to have both the wild Chinook at 14%. We need that box to be green, and we need the chum box to be green, capped at 10%. Okay? And then for coho, this year we'll be managing to the escaping goal. Now, that by no means that Willamette Bay coho will be, Francis is laughing at me, will be a good scenario. I think he's peeked ahead to the forecast. So this managing to the escapement goal, and there's some other things that we're going to talk about for coho in just a second here as I release the forecast that'll be important to remember. But overall, in terms of fishery planning for this year, these are our management objectives. Okay, now I'm going to get into the forecast. And okay, I'm a little bit behind time. So I'll go through these briefly, and then we can start having some conversation about what those mean. So overall, as I mentioned earlier, spring Chinook, we're below the escapement goal of, Mike, remind me, escapement goal 1,400, we're below that. Our forecast is for 1,236. We have no hatchery supplementation of Chehalis spring Chinook. So we will not have a recreational fishery directed at spring Chinook in the 2020 season. For fall Chinook, our forecast here, 11,144. That's in relation to a spawning objective or escapement goal of 9,753. So there's about 1,400 overall wild Chinook harvestable. We split that with our co-managers, 50-50. So that leaves us about 700 non-treaty Chinook that we can leverage in some sort of fishery package to try and get at some of these hatchery fish, that about 2,000 of them are available, within providing for broodstock needs to continue this hatchery production and to make sure that we don't go below that 9,753 number. So overall, we're forecasting about, 13,200 fall Chinook. Here for coho, it's important to remember that coho forecasts are ocean age 3 estimates. What that means is that that's the estimate or the abundance of fish out in the ocean prior to prosecution of Marine Area 1 through 4 fisheries. So once we walk through that EFMC process and those ocean options, we're going to get a number less than this across the bar. Once those ocean fisheries have been decided, the ocean's going to take some of these fish. So that's a pretty good number, considering the escapement objective and naturally spawning escape objective of 28,000 coho. And we got about 30,000 hatchery fish, once again, abundance out in the ocean. So we do have some harvestable coho this year. That's good news. Secondly, some of you may remember 20% total TER exploitation rate a few years ago that we had on Grace Harbor coho. That was because the forecasted abundance through the Pacific Salmon Treaty put us in a low threshold that would thereby limit our fishery to a 20% impact. This year with these forecasts, this puts us in a moderate threshold, so it limits our, it puts a kind of a range of total exploitation of 40 to 20%. We also share that with Canada, so once again, we can't be more than 40% when you consider fisheries from Alaska, Canada, all the way through the total, all the way into our terminal areas. So, Chehalis Basin, hump tulips, 3,857 natural Chinook in the hump tulips. In relation to an escapement goal of 3,573, that's what we need to put on the gravel for minimum seeding. We got 6,307 hatchery fish for a total of over 10,000 there. In terms of wild fish, this only leaves us a couple hundred harvestable. Once again, we got to split that with our tribal co-managers, leaving us a few wild Chinook on the table that we can try and leverage in some manner to get at some of these hatchery Chinook. Coho estimates, once again, ocean age 3, I won't go through that again, 3,850 is our natural forecast. That's about 3,000 fish below the escapement goal of 6,894. So we're under escaped even before ocean fisheries and our terminal fisheries are considered. So that's the constraint there. We will be limited to that management objective of 5%. So whatever crosses the bar, we can, by policy, Grace Harbor Salmon Management policy, we're going to limit ourselves to a 5% impact on that stock. 12,500 hatchery fish coming back. And then chum. Chum is managed Grays Harbor in the aggregate. 30,000, a little over 30,000, 2,000 hatchery fish coming back. We have an escapement objective of 21,000 fish for chum. So we've got some opportunity there for chum as well. Once again, have to split that harvestable surplus with our co-managers. Moving on, Willow Bay forecast. So kind of a low natural forecast for Willow Bay this year, 2,914 fish. It's a little lower. Our recent year average is about 3,500 in terms of actual run size over the past 5 years. So a little lower than we have been. 28,000 hatchery fish coming back, and overall 31,000 Chinook. This coho number is probably the lowest ocean age 3 estimate that at least I've seen since I've been here, and I don't think we can remember one that's been that low for quite a while. Ron may have some memories of that. Our escapement objective internally is for 13,600 natural coho. So when I say we're going to manage the escapement goal, that only leaves us, 4,000 fish total, and that's once again prior to ocean harvest. So the ocean fishery is going to take some of those. We're going to be severely constrained by this coho number. It's going to be a big constraint, a big problem. We've got 52,000 hatchery fish coming back, so there are some hatchery fish to leverage, but it's going to be real difficult to get at these given this very low number right here. That's going to be interesting. Secondly, And just want to talk about this briefly because I think it's important that you all understand. In 2011, Willapa Bay Coho were added to the fishery management plans through Pacific Fishery Management Council. That means that kicked in a bunch of different processes. One of those was that we needed a biologically based escapement goal for the PFMC to be able to evaluate our fishery packages. That was done in 2014, and that's how we ended up with this 13,600 goal. That's what we use, WDFW uses. The PFMC does not use this number. They recognize 17,200 naturally spawning coho. Okay, so that's what they're looking at in the PFMC process. And that's what, once all these fishery packages are put in, we need to have a naturally spawning coho escapement of 17,200 for us to meet those objectives. So, long ways to go there, but I just think it's important to understand some of what those constraints are. We see you, Francis. Let me get through the last little bit. We're almost done, and then we can get to questions. For chum, about 40,000 chum, 1,000 hatchery fish, so overall 40,000 chum. Once again, we're constrained to a 10% harvest rate, but so there will be a little opportunity there for chum. Just real briefly, and I don't even think, since we're over on time, and I want to make sure it get to your guys' comments and questions, here are some South Coast, Queets River, Quinault River forecasts for coho. Once again, ocean age 3 abundances. We're not done with our tribal co-managers to be able to produce forecasts for Chinook for those systems at this time. Once again, once we have that information and those forecasts are agreed to, we will send that information out through the distribution list and that sort of stuff. So, with all that being said, and me talking a whole lot, which everybody knows I like to do, I'm going to get to questions. Just want to make you guys aware of some places where you can send in comments. Don't feel like tonight you got to see us in person. This is the only way to get us comments. There is the overall North of Falcon public comments page on our website, and that link is provided here. You can also send us comments directly out here to the region, Willapa Bay at dfw.wa.gov, and those comments and fishery suggestions will get to us, and then Grays Harbor at dfw.wa.gov. With that, that's the end of what I've had prepared tonight. So what we'll do now is just please raise your hand. Jenny and Lyle here are keeping a list, and they will call people out kind of in the name they recognize. Once again, let's remember, let's have a respectful conversation. Let's try and limit the comments. You know, we don't want to go 10 minutes for each person. We'll run out of time. We want to make sure we hear from as many folks as possible. So, with that being said, who's first on our list?
Francis.
So, just a clarification on your newly bestowed PSC coho constraint.
Tim, can you go back to that?
For a number of 17.2, a statement that you just want to make sure the words and the definition are exact, the words are important.
Yep.
You said naturally spawning coho. So that could be 17.2 with 3,000 wild origin fish and 14,000 hatchery origin fish. Does that satisfy that metric?
Yes, it does. So for the Pacific Fisheries Management Council, their objective is naturally spawning coho. That's made up of both wild and hatchery coho on the spawning grounds will be considered.
Our
NSY-based
coho goal
yes.
is
13. Our internal WDFW goal, we want to end this process with at least a fishery package that escapes 13,600 wild, natural origin fish on the spawning grounds. So thank you for that, Francis. Very important distinction that you're all aware of.
Yep.
Go ahead and stand up if you could, please. I wish I had a microphone. There's so many people in the room.
So as we're watching this, most of us, there's a lot of them that are my age and seeing things all the way back to the 70s and stuff. When we're seeing these graphs, like that spotlight graph where you're talking about the good years and bad years, I think it's fair is if we're listening to this and watching this and we realize that there are fish being released from the hatcheries, that we at the same time are getting that data so that when we're looking at a poor year, how does that correlate with the release, you know, 3 or 4 years back? Because I'm not being critical, but we're seeing all of this data that's coming up, and nothing has to do anything with or is attached to what are the hatcheries doing or not doing there, you know. And so from our standpoint, it'd be nice to be able to look at this data and see, is the state holding up their end of the bargain and operating these hatcheries the way they're supposed to, and that our money is pushing out there.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. There's a lot of information. We can definitely work on that. Barb, did you get that down? Barb's taking notes of all the comments and all that thing. I think it would be easy for us to put something together, a spreadsheet, and send that out to the distribution list so folks can see maybe over the last 5-10 years what the releases have been by species. I don't think, James, I think we could probably put something like that together.
Just to clarify, there's an interest I'm hearing to get updates on what ocean conditions are at the time of release. Is that what the interest is?
No, I mean, you know, it's in regards in the year that those fish are supposed to be in that location. Did said hatchery in the Chehalis, did they put out 2,000 fish or 200,000 fish for that year?
Yeah.
How much of the poor return is because of the poor production or release in the hatchery, possibly in combined to poor ocean conditions?
Yeah, that's great. And one thing worth noting, Chad, if you don't mind going back to that slide, what Chad's showing with those ups and downs, reds and blues, those are survival rates, right? So we would say they're standardized for release. So they're not the number of fish that came back. Go one more forward. They're not the number that came back, maybe one more, that red and blue one.
This one?
With the boxes?
On the bottom there, that bottom chart, when you see red bars, those are low survival rates. And so in the blue, those are high survival rates relative to other years. The other thing to note is on the bottom, you see ocean entry year. So what happens is we release a bunch of hatchery fish, and then about 9 months later, we hear from NOAA, based on these, you know, 10-day ocean trawls, all the data has been assimilated, and then we hear, like, what did our fish that we already released deal with in the ocean? So I think that's stuff we should be reporting every year to folks so that we know what we're looking at. That's helpful.
Tim.
Two quick questions. I'm a little involved advisor, but I was appointed by the director, not elected by the people. No one knows in my neighborhood of who I am. So who in the heck is it that I represent in your mind? You didn't elect me, didn't retain me, didn't appoint me. Who is it? You keep telling everybody to call me. I'm curious about that.
I'm not telling anybody to call you. Your email address is on the website as a Willapa Bay advisor, Tim Hamilton, and you provided your website. We talked about that at the first orientation meeting. Secondly, if you look at the advisory group handbook, it talks about how the advisors are meant to represent groups of stakeholders. Now, that's in a very general sense, Tim. I'm not saying you specifically represent folks A through C in the phone book for Pacific County. It's just kind of a general statement that the advisors are meant to represent groups of people in that advisory group process. That's all I mean.
I'll finish it off so you understand my concern. Mm-hmm. Whoever gets elected out of Grace Harbor County goes to the meeting and votes on our behalf. These advisors don't vote on anybody's behalf.
Okay.
Not behind closed doors as we got stuck with for years.
Okay.
We don't vote on these things. They're providing input, not representation. That's what the law, the UDA says.
Okay.
Leave that alone.
Thanks.
14% mm-hmm. is the harvest rate in Willapa or Chinook. It's north and south, unlike Coho and Chum. It's not aggregate. We've got about 500 fish coming back. We've got 1,500 gold in the cell.
Almost all the return for natural order spawners is coming to the north, and almost all of the hatchery fish are coming to the south. So I have a question to wonder how in the world, you pointed it out, how are we going to get on these fish that limiter with coho? Put it on steroids by 100 times, and you've got wool fought in the cell. How are you going to address that?
I don't know. We've got a tough road ahead of us, Tim. We've got a lot of conversations to have. We're just at the very beginning of the process. We're gonna work towards that and over the next 8 weeks. I'm not prepared to sit here and say I got a proposed fishery package tonight. This is just where we release the forecast. We'll work through those public meetings. We're going to take input on that sort of stuff. We're going to have advisory group meetings, take some of those fishery suggestions. We're going to model it and see where it ends up.
So I'll
You're right. It's going to be really difficult.
And I'll end with this comment. What other question? Uh-huh. Are you not going to honor the 14% against the remaining few norths in the Sell River as charged to you by the commission? Are you or are you not?
Our management objective, as I stated tonight, is 14% on unmarked Chinook.
That means you're going to honor it.
Our management objective, as given to us by the commission, is 14%. That's what we will end up with at the end of our preseason planning process.
Thank you.
Right? Thanks.
Along those lines, I hear a difference in Willow for Bay. For all these other things, if we do this, if we do that, the other, then we manage for escapement. When it comes to Willow for Chinook, for example, we don't. We manage for 20% for several years when it should have been 14%. Now we're down to 14%. And why don't you say that we manage for escapement?
That's not the management objective that was handed us down through the policy and given to us in an interim guidance from the Fish and Wildlife Commission at the February 7th meeting. Their decision for management objectives for the 2020 fishery planning season was to manage for a 14% impact to wild Chinook, unmarked Chinook, in Willow Bay.
Well, I think that's wrong. I think that when they gave you a 14% limit, they didn't erase the sentence that says conservation first.
Okay.
I don't see a recovery curve, and we never will with this approach, and I have to disagree that we're going to manage Willow Bay Chinook without a recovery goal.
Okay, thanks.
And why not? And I cannot accept that the commission said that was okay.
The decision out of the commission that we have is a 14% management objective. Right? Thanks for your comment.
And did you speak?
Bill.
What's that?
Bill?
Oh, sure.
Joe?
Sorry.
Okay, I'm not Bill. I got one less
letter. Yep, you're Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Not very good.
Okay.
I see on your blue sheet dealing with Grace Harbor, Humphrey Wilson, Coho, you have NA. You didn't have the numbers at the top of the blue sheet you printed up. But in the white sheet, you showed that you have numbers coming in on Coho. Do we have an agreement on those numbers?
So what Joe is referencing is we've got a past performance table here. It's kind of color-coded. The red years are the years where we didn't make escapement goal, and that goal is listed down here on the bottom. And then we've kind of got a box here that the management objectives, whether they've been exceeded or not, 3 out of 5 years. Right here over Chehalis Coho and Humtulips Coho, you'll see we got NAs. We do not, at this point in time, have an escapement estimate for Humtulips or Chehalis Coho. The reason for that is we're still counting coho. They're still spawning. That season's not done. You'll get fish in some places into March where we're still see some coho. So we've got some time before that run size is totally, that those fish are totally done spawning, and we've got zeros in all our indexes for coho. And then we've got to go through some data QA, QC before we can produce those estimates. It takes some time.
So
I understand frustration in not having the numbers available. But.
So with that being said, you're saying 2019 we have met escapement goals on the Chehalis side for coho because you say we're there 3 out of 5, so good on that one.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to see, when you put these pages together, put the escape of goals on these pages as well, so they would have to look back and find it somewhere else. If I didn't get the blue sheet, I wouldn't know what they are.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And my other, you know, going back to what Tim said about the advisors, I served on the advisors since the beginning, and I was let go last year. I read through the old booklet, the advisory booklet, and I read through the new one. It does, there's a lot of changes, but nothing changes about who the directors represent. The advisors represent me. You've got recreational guys on the advisory board, and you've got commercial guys on the advisory board. So in my respect, and what I've always done is I brought back to the advisories what my constituents, the people I'm talking with, the fishermen out there say. And I've heard you say, they're going to take the message out to the public of what's coming from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Number one goal should be for the advisors is to talk to the constituents, talk to the guys, talk to everybody out there that's recreational fishermen and commercial fishermen, and bring their complaints back to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, not the other way around.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Joe. That's a great comment. That's absolutely, and part of the reason we talked about, you know, knowing who your advisors are. Those email addresses are provided on the webpage. Send those guys your thoughts, right? You can give them to us, give them to the advisors as well. Please utilize those processes. Thank you for that.
If you got complaints about Fish and Wildlife, go through your advisors because they don't listen. These guys shouldn't listen.
Thank you. Dave.
About the advisor bit real quick.
You're going to have to speak up, bud.
About the advisor bit real quick.
Sure.
We're all appointed to represent ourselves, to give advice to you guys, whether you like it or not. Anybody who knows me calls, and these people I really don't care to hear what calls. And I've always been pretty faithful about doing quite a few forward. But we don't have a responsibility to provide information. If somebody asks you for the model, you don't tell them, go talk to your advisor. We don't do that. That is your responsibility, Mr. Herring. And I heard that comment when you said it last year.
Absolutely.
I hope I don't hear it again.
Yep.
Okay, back to numbers. Real quick. So for everybody to understand what you've been talking about. By the way, your presentation was very good.
Thank you.
The total number, when you see Chinook with the shales, you see 2,000 hatcheries disregarded, it's like a bone. It has nothing to do with anything we do other than eat and figure out a way to cure it. That's all. The governing number will be 1,343 wild Chinook, split by half between us and the front. If you take the national policy, it's 544 in the river, 187 for the bay. Total impact. That's before the ocean and before the shale's crushed. So, and unless Mike knows off the top of his head what the average the shale's strike actually takes from the fish, because I haven't got that
recall. Fall Chinook?
Huh?
Fall Chinook?
Yes.
They typically do not target fall Chinook due to their quality when they reach.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So basically, everybody should, when they say harvest, will Chinook realize, in the best case scenario, when the ocean didn't take any, there's only 187 for the bay and 544 for the river. If the river don't use all this year, the bay don't do any mission back and forth for balance. But quite frankly, if we have a kill fishery, we'll wipe that number out in about 5 days and you'll be off the bay. If that's simple, yeah, same with the river, maybe a little better, lasts a little longer, but soon it won't happen. So everybody should think. We're going to charge out the door and we got fish coming out of the ears there because we don't. And number two is, with the state of Wilkes, no recreation, the Clark County people are always for sale, are going to keep coming north, leave the sounds and keep coming down. And if we have a kill fishery, I'll be able to walk across the bay and I'll get my feet wet for the boat. And the same thing would apply on the river. So everybody realize that's a good number, you better not make an excuse. Good to have the pad. But you shouldn't, nobody should go out here thinking, if we have a kill fisher, we'll actually wipe out, we will blow the escapement for the first time. No wreck fishery has ever blown the escapement in this basin. You do that, we will vote. And that's all that's good. There ain't that many fish.
Yep. And I think what Dave, just for some of you who are not quite as familiar with the policy language as Mr. Hamilton here, what he's referencing is in the Grace Harbor Salmon Management Policy, there's some sharing principles between recreational marine and recreational freshwater. And so Dave's absolutely right. While there are some fish harvestable, it's definitely going to be challenging. So thank you.
7327.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Anybody else? Questions?
Anybody else who has any questions or would anything north of Falcon fishery suggestions?
Yeah, I got
one. Okay, let's start back here. I saw him first, and then I'll get to you, Al. These forecasts are agreed to with what all data
did. Not like the year before, they're on their co-alignment.
No, we have technical agreement as of this afternoon on the numbers that we've shown. Those are the same numbers that the Quinault are managing to. Good question. Thank you for that. Al?
Yeah, who puts the hatchery fish in the creeks? Is that coming out of the Salmon River hatchery?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So they go up to the Salmon River and take a right then?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Could I help you 1 second real quick?
As long as, just 1 second, I want to make sure anybody else who has a chance, but I'm going to get right to you, Dave. Any takers? 1, 2, 3. Okay, go. I'll get right to you after. You'll be next, Bill.
Everybody in this room, there's a lot of history stuff that you guys will get confused about numbers when they run around stuff and historical numbers, and it causes confusion. These people put together a model every year. And it's not the harvest model, it's a pre-season forecast model for each species and includes field. Okay? If you ask Ryan and Kim, they've been very, very good about providing it every year. So many times, a lot of the questions about what happened in the past, how it's driving the present, and the future and stuff, they're right there. And if you just ask them, they'll send you that model. It's an Excel. All you need is Excel reader to do it. And there is, the world reconstruction test goes per back like 70. And it not only that, it'll show you who kept the where and how much it's all worked out. And it lagged a couple of years because the punch cards were red. But all that information is there. And a lot of times if you guys get after about data being on the right, that's another conversation. But the data is there for the public if they simply ask for the pre-season forecast money. And Mike's been very good about providing it to anybody that has.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Dave. That's a great comment. And a lot of some of you who have been involved in meetings that I've led before know we're an open book. We're transparent. Every bit of information that's on my computer or anybody else's is open to the public. You can have it. All you have to do is ask. What we won't do is we won't do specific analyses just for you. But anything we have, we're more than free to hand over. So feel free to reach out to any of your biologists, myself, Kim, Barb, any of the staff you see here. If you want to look at something that we have, just ask. We'll send it to you. We got no problem doing that. A lot of times we'll get comments here at some of these North of Falcon meetings. Like this gentleman back here said, there was something that he wanted to see that he would have liked to see in the presentation. What we're going to do is we're going to take that back. We're going to see what we have. And we'll send it back out to everyone who signed up tonight through that distribution list so everybody can see it, okay? That's just one of the things that we've tried to do in order to improve our transparency and public trust. We work for you guys. We work for you guys, okay? And we take that very seriously. So I had one in front of you, and I'll come right to you next. I believe Mr. Osborne, you had a comment?
This has nothing to do with salmon. It has to do with smell. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
People have questions about salmon still, and I want to make sure that all salmon questions are answered before we get into other fish. I have questions on other fish too, but I'm willing to wait.
Okay. And I'm not sure we have the staff in the room to answer questions about smelt on the cowlets. None of us here manage the cowlets.
We were certainly happy to give you the name of the person who talked to you.
Yeah.
He's talking about Wyoochee smelt.
Yeah, they're over there right now. That's what I want to talk about.
Oh, okay. About. Yeah, we can do that. Let's try and touch base after the meeting, Bill. I have this gentleman, and then I'm coming to you, Bob.
So my question is about the forecasting tool right from the get-go. It seems that over the last few years, especially, the system is flawed. I'd like to know if the department recognizes that, and then what steps are being made to try to correct that or get better at it.
Absolutely. That's a great question. Forecasts are forecasts. If any of us could nail a forecast on a consistent basis, right, we'd be a hero across the Pacific Coast, okay? There's many forecasts that are done, Sacramento Fall Chinook, Columbia, the Columbia River forecast, a lot of firepower thrown at that, a lot of PhDs, a lot of people. There's a lot of variation and stuff that goes into this. We're using the best available science that we have available to us and what we know about the fish in order to forecast. But the truth is, we don't know it all. We don't have all the pieces. But in regards to the second part of your question, we are absolutely working every year to look at what our forecasts were, look at where we went wrong, and try and look at new tools, what's emerging science is coming out in terms of forecasting, where we went wrong, different ways that we can look at things. I know James, this is one of the things he really enjoys, is working on forecasting and different tools. We're excited about some of the things that we're starting to work on as the team becomes gets up to speed. We've got some new folks in the region. We're excited to take looks at forecasting in different ways. There's some work being done down in the Columbia through our science division, looking at different kind of modeling techniques, less traditional than what we have been using in terms of producing forecasts. So there's a lot of work being done. We recognize it. We'd love to have the perfect number. That makes my job easy, right? If I knew exactly what was going to happen, we could sit down and just, okay, this goes here, this goes here, we'll make a statement, everybody gets a fishery, or, you know, that'd be great.
Is there any conversation about in-season management?
Absolutely, absolutely. Great, that's another thing. You know, we're challenged a little bit in Grace Harbor with the funding necessary to produce an active monitoring of either the marine area or of the freshwater recreational harvest for commercial harvest. We get those numbers within 24 hours. Commercial fisheries have to report 10 a.m. the next day. That needs to be coming in. That data will come in through Barb and Kim, our fishery kind of manager, data managers. So we know what's happening in the commercial fishery. In Grace Harbor, the rec fishery is the one that's kind of challenging. We got to wait for CRC. I personally have put in funding requests just for this legislature session, $750,000 to do exactly what I'm talking about right now. To have an active monitoring of the Grace Harbor marine area, and then also to institute a freshwater recreational program that would cover the whole coast. We intensively monitor one river system, Nacelle, Sata, Wainuchi, Solda. Every year, we focus intensely on that in order to develop better modeling and better tools to be able to adaptively manage in season, something we're working on all the time. For Willapa Bay, beginning in 2017, we've instituted an active creel monitoring program. So we cover the Tokeland and South Bend boat launches 4 days a week. Our sample rate is about anywhere from 55 to 60% of the total anglers that are fishing within Willapa Bay. With that data, we can produce estimates of catch, encounters or impacts to non-retained species, and also estimate the number of anglers participating every week. By stat week, we can even break it down into Monday through Thursday and Friday through Sunday and produce those estimates. So it's absolutely something we're working on. We're always looking for ways to get better, always. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
Bob.
My question is really pointing more at someone that hasn't been here for quite a while and has a lot of questions to answer for. Ron Warren, I got a question for you. How do you plan on dealing with the perception of most fishermen in the state that the state is failing to represent its constituents in tribal negotiations, both with transparency in meetings and kowtowing to the tribes in relation to ESA permits that you piggyback on top of, and then using the excuse, well, if we argue with them, then we won't be able to do that. It may be years before you fish. That's one. Number two, a lot of political pressure drives what the tribes get in terms of the Fish and Wildlife Department. They seem to like knuckle under on numerous fisheries where they're allowed to fish, and fishermen, recreational fishermen, are not. And that's going to come back and bite you tonight when everybody has questions about steelhead. How do you personally answer the people that say you're the donkey everybody's trying to pin this on because you're the missing link in this whole equation? Your name wasn't up on that. And you're here tonight as part of that chain. When you run all of this, and I really want to know how you're going to change the perception that people have in this state that you personally have sold us out to the tribes.
Straight up.
And in the past, I've had Phil Anderson to blame for this stuff, but he's long gone. Now he's paid as a technical advisor to screw us in the processes above our levels.
So thanks for the question. When we are asked to meet on a government-to-government basis with tribal governments, we ask if advisors or other people can come. We're told no. We're exploring that, but we push that every single year.
Well, fine. Put a camera in there and let us see. The object has been well. There were rude people in the past that interrupted and were unfair to the tribes in public meetings. That's fine. Let us see your negotiations. These backdoor sessions are going to make you look really bad. I'm getting to the point after years of dealing with you that you just don't care because you answer to higher people whose political contributions are directly related to the tribes, and the state does not want to spend the money to litigate against casino interests.
So, I guess, I guess I've never been confronted by politicians above me asking me to do something or not do something relative to tribes. I consult with my attorneys within the Attorney General's office. They give me guidance on what I can and can't do, what I can push and what I can't push.
Well, those are the people that are afraid of litigation.
Please let me finish.
Okay.
And so we're exploring ways to try to enter the room with our team of people, regardless if they're employees or not. We think that there may be avenues, and we're looking at that. We have asked for per commission guidance, and something that we do every single year, we ask for observers to come into the room so that they can listen. I'd much rather have individuals in the room outside of our agency employees, because those are the people that are going to be believed more than they're going to believe me, because just because of all of the perceptions that I have about me and my interactions with tribal governments. I get that. I'd much rather have you come in to a meeting and be able to come back and tell the crowd, well, he did a great job, or he sucks just like we thought he did.
Well, just put a camera in there.
I don't have the ability to put a camera in a room and videotape
something. Well, information would force you to do that. And don't we have a lawsuit going on about that right now?
Yeah.
That's a pizza topic.
Sure.
You know, what do you want on your pizza? I don't know. We're all just really fed up with this. It is not a transparent process, which is what it's supposed to be. And the fact that things are going on behind our backs does not lend credibility to your statements.
It seems to us a lot that the lawyers are risk averse, and if they would take the chance and push the issue, maybe we would get to hear more. But
okay,
it would do wonders for the department.
Appreciate the comment.
Okay. I think we have team next.
Who's next? Sure.
That was a fun little interlude. Back to our regular extension program.
I'm going to make one comment.
Hey, my buddy Jack.
You're a great friend.
I went down the street and had a cigarette, and I thought it all through. And Friday and Saturday at the commissions, for Thursday before, I never heard the ones, the two words, management objection. I'll go pull the tapes if you want to. But never once did that commission ever say the word management objective. You guys came up with that. So, with that in mind, we're talking about the maximum harvest rates that they put in Grace Harbor and Little Paul Poe in the policies, which are guidances in a law.
Yeah.
Just guidances. And they always say the same thing, thou shalt not exceed. And yet the department says, oh no, we have to do that 14%. No, it says you over boat. It's a cap. And when you fish at the cap and there's an under forecast or over harvest, you're guaranteed to blow it. Okay? So elsewhere they have like let's go into the preseason forecast in the Columbia, and we're going to subtract 30% off the preseason forecast as a buffer to prevent us from screwing the future.
Good.
Why is it this department never does that in Grace Harbor and Little Paul?
You know, that's a good question. We've worked really hard to increase our understanding in season of what's happening in the fisheries. Like I said, we know exactly what the commercial harvest is within 24 hours of them prosecuting a fishery. We know exactly what it is. We've got onboard observers who are out there getting encounters of wild fish, so we can estimate within 24 hours. We turn that stuff around. If we fish today from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., by 2 o'clock tomorrow, I've got a summary out, and you've seen them. I send them out to the advisory group of what the harvest was, how many people participated, and what the overall impacts were to non-retained species. We got that for the commercial fishery. Yeah. Secondly, hold on, let me answer the question. As this gentleman pointed out, what are you doing for other fisheries? What's your adaptive management? So for Willapa Bay, we have an active creel monitoring. So within a week, we can understand and be able to estimate what the harvest and impacts. What this does is give us the ability to look at what the preseason prediction was, right? We can take into account the environmental conditions, what the effort looks like, and within a reasonable amount of time, either do a course correction or not. The first couple of years of implementation of the policy, that was rocky. We had to collect the data, and we had to get there. So as you're fully aware, and a lot of people in this room, we had a 20% management objective, and we exceeded it. It was 22% 1 year, 21% in the others. But after we've started collecting that data, and within a couple of years, beginning in 2017, we've hit that rate every time. We haven't exceeded it at all. Not 1 year. In our run reconstructions right now. So I would say for Willapa Bay, with the funding that we've received and the programs we've put in place, we have the ability to do just that. There's still some challenges in the Columbia River. And then the last thing I'll say is the guidance, strong guidance, that I'm getting from the Fish and Wildlife Commission was not to institute even a further buffer. There was conversation about that. But my objective, as I understand it, and I'll have to go back and double check, but from what I understand, the objective was for the 2020 fishery season to manage for a 14% unmarked impact rate cap on Willapa Bay Chinook. That's my understanding.
Yes. Now, okay. We gave you all in-season management routines that y'all over here was talking about. My question was directed towards the plan that you installed in said season and put in a CR-102 and establish it. That's where you take the buffer before the holes of the nets go in the water. It's at that point in time.
Sure.
I understand.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. Then I misunderstood your question.
Because all the rest of the places where they get a buffer and put it in the place have better abilities for creel counting and all this run reconstruction and all the in-season monitoring that we have in Grace Harbor.
Okay.
We should have a bigger buffer.
You understand what I'm saying?
No, I get it now. I'm sorry I misunderstood your question. We got that written down, and thanks for that comment. Appreciate it.
This kind of follows up on what Scott was talking about, but as far as seeing where the data comes from, I think there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of bits and pieces for the forecast as well as for the in-season data capture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an overwhelming concern that the data capture is flawed. Whether forecast data, of course, you can't predict it. There's no way. But we should have data capacity to gain something. We have catch record cards for sport fishermen. We have logbooks instituted for the guys now. We have, obviously, the commercial catches and things like that. And I don't think that we're feeling like we're seeing an adequate representation of that data or really even know where it's coming from so that we can all come up with ideas to help you guys understand better data or get better data. I think there's a lot of people that want to see this fishery continue on, and if we don't see where the data is coming from or have this perception that it's flawed, we can't come up with any way to help you guys out better. And I think there's also a misconception that people want to tell you that fish numbers are low. They're afraid that if they just tell you, oh man, there's this beautiful abundance of fish, that, you know, they're going to, I don't know, there's just misconceptions, I think, across the board, and there's a... I think there's people out there that are like, well, I'm not going to tell them I caught a bunch of fish today. I don't know why that misconception is there. I think it would be nice to see that there's an abundance. But anyway, so the data is flawed, and how are you guys, capturing it? It would be nice to see, like as a data, or as something you guys send out, that you're talking about, if you wanted to see the data on the hatchery releases, is this something else you could potentially show us?
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff that's available on the WBFW website. All those hatchery releases are available.
Sure.
Easy to click on and show. In terms of how we do what we do and how all the beans are counted, hear that. There's a lot of new faces. At times, we have offered a work group or workshop sessions where we've sat in a room like this and been willing to sit down and talk about that. Most notably, I see you, James, I'll get right to you. In 2018, we had some workshop sessions for Will of the Bay, where we discussed the recreational and commercial monitoring programs, as well as the Lyle did some presentations on how stock assessment does and all that sort of stuff. So I'm hearing your comment loud and clear. Barb's writing it down, and I think James probably got some thoughts to weigh in, but go ahead, James.
Yeah, they're really good comments, and you know, for me, as I sort of zoom in on Will of the Bay, Grace Harbor, and try to understand all the technical work that's happened over the last 30 years, like you look across the globe, and we're not looking at salmon fisheries at the high resolution as we are anywhere else, as Will of the Bay and Grace Harbor. I mean, you imagine the amount of effort going into monitoring salmon here is sort of mind-blowing. And so I'm not trying to put it on anybody in this room, but I think one start, you know, to improve the tools or at least get the tools in your hands is super tight relationships here, you know, in the room. And we've developed a few of them, and Chad's been, you know, working for years now trying to tighten those up. But, you know, the guide community for all this steelhead, you know, buzz that's been going on has really come out of the woodwork. Late night phone calls, you know, we're all stressing together, like, how are we going to do this right? And I think in season, Chinook, Coho Chum, steelhead, I think if those phone calls are coming in, and it's not just sort of a vague email from a random fish and wildlife website, those are important tools for folks that don't come to these meetings. But if you're in this room and you're spending your energy anyway, we might as well exchange numbers, you know? And if you got a call at 10 o'clock at night, if my wife's not looking, I'll totally answer, you know? So I think the relationships, I mean, the data quality could be improved, but as someone that gets excited about data, what we're doing in Willow Point and Grace Harbor is pretty amazing. Like, it really is. And that's not just me trying to sell it. So I think we make sure you guys to a place where you agree with that.
On your guys' data, I think that sounds like you're actually trying to make the effort. How do you monitor the data coming from the tribal side of it?
Big challenge, right? So Willow of the Bay, I mean, and there's a bunch of fish wildlife folks in this room right now nodding their head, like, good question. And so we've got, you look across sort of the landscape of our tribal relationship, and we've got places where we're high-fiving, right? Our kids go to school with their kids, and we're seeing each other in the parking lot, you know, and we're sharing data on the fly, and we've got weekly check-ins with the Ho and the Quileute. We've got other places where it's not seamless like that, right? And I think we can all, those that have been in the fishing community a while, we know who's who. So we're working hard on the relationships, and I mean, again, I'm not trying to, you know, wave the fish and wildlife flag, but I really believe we got the right people working on it.
it's not that we got the wrong people. I think, you know, we're putting the hours in, but creative ideas, like, you know, folks in the community are fishing alongside places where relationships are challenging. I think maybe we've come up with new big ideas to improve that. But the data quality coming from the tribes in a lot of places is great. You know, it's actually great. Not everywhere, though.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So, thanks for your comment. We hear you loud and clear. James and I will be, and Larry, we hear what you guys are saying, and maybe some more workshops, something like that, will be in order to go over some of that stuff. So we'll definitely take a look at that and be in touch. Thank you.
Green hat.
Green hat guy.
As far as your statement, is that based off of just main stem spawner surveys, or do you survey feeder streams as well?
Really, regardless of whatever species you're talking about, we have index surveys across the whole watershed and across basins. We try and look at indexes that we survey intensively every week. Across a variety of densities and habitat types. So main stem, second order tributaries like Satsup, Wainuchi, depending on the species, right? Some Chinook don't in little creeks, dry bed creek, you know, things like that, Decker, you know. So we're looking in all different areas. We do our best to really get a random, you know, a decent sample. I won't specifically say random, that's not the right word, but we have historical indexes that run the gamut. And we're looking at all those, and we're looking at what historically has been there and what we're seeing in there through time. Then we have a whole other suite of indexes that we do just at peak, just one-time samples, and we use those weekly intensive surveys to with those one-time surveys in the other areas at peak to be able to estimate what everything is all the way through. So we're doing the best we can. It's not a perfect situation. Out here, we've got a lot of spawning habitat. Wilk Bay, 1,500 linear miles. I don't know what it is for Grace Harbor or the Chehalis system, but it's quite a bit. We're not able to cover the entire spawning habitats, but we do our best to sample each one of those and then be able to estimate. Like I said, be excited to talk with you about that and have you learn more about how we do that. That's something we really get excited about. I mean, every one of us are scientists here at heart, and nothing gets us going more than diving into how we do the science. I mean, Francis can't get me off the phone sometimes. So, thank you. Thank you.
Alan, one of
the guys
who
checked the Alan, did you mean Al first and then the Hollingsworth? Okay, sorry. I see you, Al. I was confused by the name.
On the Grays Harbor forecast, have they been with Quinault, so they've written on it too?
Yes, we have technical agreement with the Quinault Indian Nation on all the Grays Harbor forecasts. And the Queets and Quinault Coho forecast, we are not there for Chinook forecasts on the Queets and Quinault.
Okay, and then on the Willapaw, where you have that bigger escapable for wild coho, so you can dump a whole lot of hatchery fish, coho, above a hatchery, and then meet their requirements?
That meets their requirement. That's all I'm trying to say is, in the PFMC process, when Tim referenced the FRAM model, which for those of you who don't know is the Fisheries Regulation and Assessment Model, we have one of those for Chinook, we have one of those for Coho, all the fisheries, ocean fisheries, all that stuff are crammed into this model, historic harvest rates, run sizes, all this stuff, and it kicks out what the likely outcome in terms of escapement and that sort of stuff is in those fisheries. So in the PFMC process for Willapa Bay Coho, their objective is 17,200 naturally spawning coho. That's what PFMC needs to see in terms of the whole fishery regulation package, right? That's what they want to see as an objective once all that's put together. For us, individually, WDFW, we're looking for a fishery package in the terminal area that would meet that escapement objective of 13,600 wild fish on the spawning grounds. Not... So, two different things, right?
Okay, one other comment. Tim was talking about a 30% buffer. The reason they use that on the Columbia because they have a dam
Yeah.
They can count the fish to know if they're plus or minus.
An update.
And it would it take. Yeah. Well, you still haven't got all the coho counted in Grace
Harbor. Columbia River Management, right. Not even close to apples comparison to what we have here. You got BPA mitigation money. You got dams. You got tons, millions and millions of dollars. Washington biologists, Oregon biologists, federal biologists, tribal biologists, not even close. So thanks for that. I think was Al.
I just thought I was going to ask about the white t-shirt.
White t-shirt.
Most of it was covered by theirs, but you had mentioned that you're looking for funding to help with the program so that they can count fish. We have a Fish Washington app. Some of the other states use big game tags on apps, and the commercial fisheries use electronic means to report. Is there anything like that that you guys are?
Yeah, we're definitely looking, and I'm not sure about what's coming out of the budget in this budget cycle, but I think we were definitely looking for money to finish the electronic catch record card system. Is that accurate, Larry?
I don't know what that is. Yeah, I know the team's working on catch record card, electronic catch record card.
Yeah, I don't really have an update on where that is. It's something we're definitely looking at and trying to work on. And from my understanding, I think the Fish Washington app was the first piece of that, and then successive pieces were supposed to get to that point. I don't know if we have the fund yet. So something we're definitely considering, though. Thank you. Great comment. Al?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about the Creole counters down in Quilapa. They are nice. They're nice to have. And I know they're there for you guys. They're to count the fish. But also, as a fisherman, you show up and they're full of a lot of knowledge. They'll let you know what happened the day before, even that day. And so they're kind of a resource for a fisherman, too.
Yep. Thank you for that. That's a great comment. And for those of you, that's the person who's responsible for that program. Bart does an awesome job training those people up, making sure they have a ton of information. So, great job, Bart. Your staff, you get a big kudos.
I got one more question.
You're off today. Dave's just not
Dave. Dave?
And then Joe. And then Joe.
And then you. Dave, Joe, Durham, and then, and then Bob.
Okay. We shut the Chehalis down for springers. Low forecast, it came in over 1,000. Yep. I missed it by 100%. But having dealt with a long time back, one of the most honest statement I got out of Montana one time was, how honest was your how good your preseason forecast was? He said plus or minus 100%. Fairly decent answer. Okay. But we then turned around and shut down the game fishers inland. Are the people who had the least amount of impact on any salmon in its entire basin. Okay, that's one. And now it was because you, and by the way, I had to see probably document requests, and I've seen all the conversations.
Not trying to hide it. I made that recommendation.
Are you entitled to it?
Okay? I made that recommendation to Olympia staff.
I did it with Tyler.
I made that recommendation to Olympia staff. Not trying to hide that. You couldn't just ask me for it, and I would have gave it to you.
The second part is, I got it.
I know you.
The second part is you just shut it down for a steelhead. And that's why I urge people to get the preseason forecast model. The average, 10-year, now you got to realize everything's up and down, so you're an average. The average impact on natural fish on those steelhead fishing is 94. At the time the Quinault shut down, off basic math, what they normally do, they should have had 99 wild. Okay. In a normal year, the wreck minus the Chehalis bite will take twice as many steelhead and hogs as the Quinaults do, because we catch and release. You add summer run steelhead, and that goes in a pot, it goes to 3, 3.5 for them. That is the way it works because we are selective. You shut the Chehalis down, and if we had done it all year, we would not have had the impacts that the Quinault Nation already incurred. Okay? On the wild ones. The hatchery are one of the bonus fish. The wild
We leverage wild fish to go after hatchery fish.
The thing about this is, if you anybody was go up to the website, which I'm very good about updating, Bingham even finally updated a month and a half late.
Yeah.
Skookum Chuck's run 100% ahead.
Of hatchery fish.
Yes, hatchery fish. The wild fish ain't doing any worse than they're on the third parallel normal. Understanding if the corals had kept on fishing, those numbers would look much different.
Absolutely.
So the conservation group might not have been good. Okay. The thing is, why did you not defend the recreational fisher who catches and uses, and the purpose of that is so they can not have a great impact on steelhead as the commercial fishery does, so they can fish through good times and bad times everywhere.
So what we have here is Jameson, help me with this. I believe this line here is the forecasting of budgets. Go ahead.
I'll help out here. So are we going to shift focus to steelhead? Is that sort of?
Joe, do you have a salmon north of Falcon question? Okay, we're going to do this first, and then we'll get right to you.
Yeah, I got one more.
You got a salmon? Okay, we'll do this, and then we'll come back to the steelhead. Go ahead, Joe.
By looking at what we have coming back from Wild Shark and Shayla System, it looks like the non-treaty share going through the gill nets and recreational fishing, we have less than 700 chinook coming back. And we have like 2,000 hatchery chinook coming back. I would recommend for a fishery that we fish for the hatchery fish and release wild fish. Let those wild fish get back to the spawning grounds, because if we're running low, we're going to make a statement you have to hear. But now, if we do that, are the corals going to go after those fish?
You know, I can't answer that question right now. We got, like I said earlier, when Tim was asking a similar question, I don't know what the Quinault fishery schedule looks like.
We did that one year before, back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And 90s or early 2000s, I can't remember what it was. Yeah. The Quinault sit back. If you don't go after those fish, we will go after one foreboat opportunity. There is no foreboat opportunity in the treaty. I've read that treaty inside out, upside down, backwards, and through a looking glass. If we don't want our fish, if the recreational fishermen in this room want to let those fish get back in the gravel, it's not going to be. We're not going to get 696 fish back, because they're going to go through the non-treaty gillnet or the treaty gillnets out there, and they'll be allowed to keep them because they are there.
Absolutely.
So we are not looking at the Chalice system. All the rivers from Chalice River Bridge up, we're probably looking at maybe 300 fish, wild fish. And I think every recreational guy in this room said, let's get those fish back to the gravel. Now my other comments goes over to the Wyandotte mitigation.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to stop you right there, because Bob wanted to talk about salmon.
This is salmon.
I heard your comment and your fishery suggestion. Bart, did you get his fishery suggestion down? We absolutely got that recorded, and we're going to take a look at exactly what you said, and we'll produce a model run to see the outcome of that. I'm going to come right back to your Wyandotte mitigation. Bob has we're almost out of time here. We got 7 minutes left, so I want to make sure everybody who wants to talk about 2020 North of Falcon gets an opportunity to do that before we move on. We're willing to have that conversation, Joe, and we will. Bob, please.
This is the last salmon question, evidently. Is it directly related to the 2020 forecast or harvest? But it is directly related to our Chinook problem.
Okay.
Now, we went to a meeting last year that the state called about discussing the Chehalis River, the dam that they're proposing on the upper levels. And we asked for information, and we were told, we want your comments, we don't have information from you. What is WDFW's stance going to be on the loss of Chinook habitat when they clear cut all those trees on that slope to make this dam? How does that fit into the fact that we're trying to restore a Chinook population that is in the crabling?
Yeah. Okay.
Are you guys just going to roll over and let this happen without
any input? Hold on a second. Bob, please. I'm going to answer your question.
Okay.
I don't know.
I do.
I understand.
Hey,
just a second.
So we very loved for Bob. So the department has a team that's running on their Chehalis River dam control, flood control. So there's two pieces of that. There's an aquatic species enhancement program, and there's also the flood control piece of that. Our director, Director Seussman, provided a letter to the Chehalis Basin group strongly indicating that we believe that there's adverse or negative effects are going to happen from the implementation, the moving forward with the flood control. We have a series of folks that are working on a team to best inform the decision makers about the potential impacts of flood control, specifically the issues. We think it's going to have a negative impact on fish and resources, and we want on record to say that.
That's the answer I want to hear.
Thank you. When we were at their meeting, they looked at us when we took the Fish and Wildlife like, we don't care.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, we hear that. We hear that loud and clear. And Bob, I just wanted to finish my statement. The reason I say that I don't know is because I'm not involved in those processes. I manage the fishery, and I work on policy implementation. I'm not part of the dam work group, and my next thing was just to make that distinction and turn it over to Larry so he can give you the answer he did.
You got to refer to back group, back to the group, to tell you what the impacts are on steelhead and coal if that dam goes in.
Okay, thank you.
Give it to me. That's Ron Ward. He's got the answer.
Okay, thanks. All right, so is there any other comments specific to 2020 North of Falcon that anybody would like to get on the record before we go ahead and move on to some steelhead stuff for a little bit? Going to kind of conclude the North of Falcon portion of this meeting. Okay. I know, Wainuchi mitigation. We're going to get to Wainuchi mitigation, but we need fishery suggestions and inputs. I saw that when I see this.
I suggest that instead of closing the whole Chehalis River for all these lengths of months, you open it up so I can fish for bass and keep those bass out of the river that are eating all the salmon smolt.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Barb. Did you?
Same
you
with got the suckers and the squaw fish. Okay. I grew up on that river, and I'm really disappointed in what I see these last few years with.
Great.
The holes are full of bass.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah. No, and Grace is enough. There was one other gentleman, Jenny. Oh, Leroy. Hey, folks. Please, please, please. We're trying to get some stuff on the record, and just we'll be done in just a second here.
I got one clarification of Mike, and what Bob was talking about the dam. How many of you have been up there? How many of you hunted that country? How many of you know what it is?
Yep.
Based on.
But there's not enough spawning grounds up there for Chinook. It is not a Chinook River. So no matter what you do in a dam up there, it's not going to hurt what you guys are down here. You're all in the stream in this water, ruining all the spawning grounds. There's nothing up there.
Thank you for that, Leroy. Does anyone else have any fishery suggestions North of Falcon related? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands, so as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we were going to start on time and we're going to end on time. So we are ending. What we will do is stick around for a little bit. What I mean is we're ending the North of Falcon portion of the meeting. I think there's some folks who want to talk about steelhead. We can have a quick discussion on North of Falcon or Wainuchi mitigation if we have time for that. So any of you folks who are not interested in talking about steelhead, feel free to get up and leave. I think I'm going to turn it over to James. James, that's not you. You get to stay. So let's just take a break for a few seconds, and then maybe we can come back, allow some of those people who don't want to, aren't interested in this discussion, to leave the room. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate your comments. Like I said, Philippa Bay, next meeting, March 12th. Grace Harbor at some later date that's in your packet. Thank you.
I think Rick,